Welcome to the Heart Kids podcast. Join us as we explore stories of Australians impacted by childhood heart conditions. I am one of your hosts, Samuel Stolberg. I was born with a congenital heart condition and I had my first open heart surgery at the age of 26. Before we begin, we'd like to acknowledge that we are recording on the land of the Gubbi Gubbi peoples, otherwise known as Queensland's Sunshine Coast. We acknowledge the traditional owners of this land and the land that you're listening in from today. We pay our respect to elders past, present and emerging. Today I'm chatting to Elle Pendrick. If you've had open heart surgery before, you may have heard of Elle, or you may have read her article on the Heart Kids blog titled Open Heart Surgery Tips and Tricks from a Pro. Elle and I have both had open heart surgery, and today we're going to chat about some of the things that you can do to help prepare yourself for surgery, both physically and mentally. Welcome and thank you for joining us. Elle, where are you joining us from?
Oh, thanks, Sam. It's really great to be here. I'm joining from actually miserable Canberra and the Ngunnawal Nation.
Yeah, lovely. A beautiful place, Canberra. I went down to visit a mate who's in the army down there. So froze myself. I'm a sunny Queensland boy and love the warm temperature. And yeah, it was freezing down there.
So. Yeah, it certainly is today.
So let's get into it. What does it mean to be an open heart surgery pro? How many surgeries have you actually had?
Well, it took me a bit to decide whether I was a pro or not, but I hadn't met too many other people who'd had five open heart surgeries. So I thought that may be a bit of a pro. And also when I went in for my fifth open heart surgery, I had like a list of what I wanted and what I didn't want and questions. And even the surgeon said to me, we don't usually get repeat customers like this with all of this. So I thought, okay, I'm a pro at this. Like I know what I'm doing. And yeah, I had my first surgery at 3 days old and then 6 years, 8 years, 21 years old, and then 33 was my last one, and I'm gloriously 39 now.
Awesome. That's so good. Yeah, when I went in for my surgery, I definitely went in blind. So I'm hoping that what we can do today is bring some education for people who went down that same sort of path.
Absolutely.
So tell us a little bit about your heart condition.
Well, so unfortunately, I don't have a really cool name like TOF or something like that. Mine is pulmonary atresia with an intact septum and a leaky mitral valve. It's a bit of a mouthful, actually. So.
It definitely sounds like a mouthful, but seeing as you're a pro, you rattled it off nicely.
Yeah.
So now that we have actually verified that you are definitely a qualified pro when it comes to open heart surgery, what motivated you to write the blog about it for Heart Kids?
I think by the time I got to the fifth time round, I realized when I went in for my fourth surgery at 21, there was just nothing available. There was, you know, you get the hospital information, but that's, you know, pretty generic and they do a really good job of that. But there was nothing that really spoke to me about what to expect, what to, you know, prepare for, what to do while I was in the hospital, what to pack, like nothing really. And I did what everybody does and I Googled it and I couldn't really find anything that I found that helpful and practical tips. So after my fifth surgery, I just thought, nah, that's it. I'm going to write it myself.
Write the how-to guide from personal experience. Yep. I love it. So let's get into it. You know, having open heart surgery is obviously a major thing. You're quite literally putting your heart in someone else's hands. How do you make sure you've got the right people for you on your medical team?
Having the right people is absolutely critical, particularly for people with complex or any type of congenital heart disease. So there's been some research that people who see a specialist congenital heart cardiologist and surgeon have much better outcomes. So statistically, you're better off hunting around and making sure you're seeing the right cardiologist and the right surgeon for you. I knew my surgeon was absolutely the right person for my surgery because he'd done the last one. So he'd specialized in people like me who'd already had surgeries or who were born with it or acquired it at a young age. And I think, you know, the best way to do that is to ask some questions, you know, who do you normally see, and try and get to the bottom of that before you sort of commit to any type of surgery.
Yeah, for sure. And you've got to make sure you're comfortable with that person because that's a big part of the healing process as well, right?
Absolutely. And as you said, you're literally putting your heart in their hands and you've got to make sure that you've got the right team behind you trying to get you through a really big surgery.
Yeah, for sure. I know from my experience just how mentally and emotionally challenging open heart surgery can be. What was your experience with the psychological side of things and what are your tips for managing this while preparing for surgery?
Well, I think I was pretty light. I tried to be a bit light touch in what I wrote, but now talking about it, I think I freaked out. I completely freaked out. And most people I talk to and try and help through that process, it's normal. It's okay not to be okay thinking, oh my God, I'm going in either for another surgery or my first surgery. It's a big deal. And so I went and saw a psychologist. I was pretty proactive. I'd already been seeing one anyway. I'm really big on seeing counselors and psychologists and helping you along the way. And my view is always, I don't have all the tools in the toolkit to be able to handle every situation. And they helped me with certain tools. And the person I saw, she was amazing. I actually was having flashbacks while I was driving and then having freakouts. And it's just like, okay, so, you know, try this and try that. And one of the really fascinating things, because I was really afraid of the scalpel and that sort of thing. And she's like, try getting a spoon and putting the back underside of it just on your skin so you can feel it and feel that, you know, it's okay. It's not as bad as you think. And then slowly progress and quite sensitive in my existing scar areas and sort of learning that it's safe and it's, you know, it's obviously for a good reason. And I think in addition to getting help myself, one of the really important things is also supporting my friends and family to get some support, because being a carer is hard. It's really hard because my life stopped and I had to take time off, but my husband had to, my mom did, my whole family does. And this is, you know, not the first rodeo we've been on, so we're quite practiced at it. But I would highly recommend other people seek some help as well. And there's a lot of other ways you can try and mentally prepare. Write down everything that you kind of get nervous about. Have a good think through. And I went in with the whole shopping list, you know, because they'd pulled last time they had the intubation, the tube in my mouth that went down into my throat so that I could breathe. It ripped into my lip. And so I wrote down, like, don't tie it in so tight the next time. And really practical things that I was like, no, I don't want that again. Thank you very much. And, you know, the nurses were amazing. I handed it over and they're like, yeah, yeah. And none of that happened. They just made sure none of it happened again. They were absolutely incredible. But it also helped my mental well-being when, you know, I woke up and I'm coming out of, you know, into out of the surgery, and mentally I'd prepared, and mentally I'd, you know, also worked with the team, the medical team, who really helped me. So what sorts of things do you do, Sam?
My situation is something that I've spoken a bit about on this podcast and in a few other podcasts that I've done. So my surgery was sort of sprung on me very quickly and it rattled my world. So I went in to my cardiologist appointment. I was overdue for a checkup. I just moved to the Sunshine Coast. And I'd actually broken my ankle on the weekend from falling off my skateboard. And my cardiologist was like, what happened to you? I told him, and he's like, that could have killed you because you've got to have surgery the next 90 days. That was the first appointment that I'd actually gone to that I didn't have my support group with me, my team behind me, like, you know, mum, my sister. Or so that was obviously a big shock. So, and it ended up nearly being 6 months by the time I had the surgery. So I'd sort of suffered a bit of anxiety and depression in the past. So if I had the ability to have the foresight, you know, and hear this sort of kind of a conversation and say, look, go out and find the support, because this is stuff that you're very likely going to go through. And that would have been hugely beneficial for me, because I flew in blind, and as good as the health system is, you know, there's still a few holes in it. Yeah. It was quite confronting for me, but yeah, I'm grateful that I do have a beautiful support group around me, and I could lean on my friends and say, hey, I'm not okay. I need some help. And yeah, I had that support there. So.
That's fantastic that you have the support around you, and it's really tough, you know, and it doesn't only impact you, it impacts them as well. And the support that's available now is amazing. Another thing, including seeing someone and actually talking about it and trying to come up with physical ways to try and deal with the stress of it. I also did a lot of meditation and hypnosis and found those resources that I could do at home by myself without needing a professional with me at all times, which is not possible, but I found that helped me shift my mindset a lot. And, you know, I found some great stuff on needle phobia and things like that, because, I mean, after, you know, years and years and years of needles and this and that, and, you know, you've just been in and out of hospitals my whole life, and getting to a point where you're kind of like, oh, I don't want to go in. They're going to poke me like a bloody pincushion again. Sorry. And, you know, being able to kind of mentally prepare for that and think that through is really important as well.
Yeah, meditation, now that I'm on the other side of it, like, I've stepped into this new healing modality, I guess, and, like, you know, it's just across the board. And yeah, meditation has come into my life, and I think that my heart surgery was a huge catalyst to go down that path, and it's been amazing for so many different aspects of my life. And how beneficial it has been. I've had some beautiful experiences whilst doing it as well. So not only is it healing, but it's also incredibly powerful for all aspects of your life. So I always have a huge testament for what meditation can actually do. So
yeah, same.
So there's no two ways around it. Having surgery and completing the recovery is always going to be disruptive in your life, like having to take time off work or study. What are your tips for how we can manage this impact?
Oh, well, I guess, yeah, as you say, there's no ifs or buts. You've got to take the leave. Like, it's just, it is what it is. And I think when I was obviously in primary school, you know, I had lots of surgeries then and had time off, and, you know, friends and school friends and stuff were pretty good, but I still found it pretty difficult to keep up with schoolwork and do those sorts of things. But then as a young adult, when I was 21 and going in for my fourth open heart surgery, and I was part-time uni, part-time working, and I had complications afterwards, and I found it really hard to find my feet. And I think one of the things is making sure that I had been really upfront with my workplace and I was really upfront with my university. So I got the relevant letters from my specialist saying, you know, I'm going in for surgery. This is what, you know, X amount of time it's going to be needed. And I actually do remember going into the surgeon and he was like, right, so I think, yeah, we'll just let you know when it's on. And I put up an argument, it was a bit cheeky, and I said, well, I'd like to go back to university, so semester two. So if you could do it semester one, that'd be great. I'm available in time before April. Blah, blah. He's like, oh, okay. So I managed to have it in semester one and go back for semester two. So try and negotiate. You never know what you're going to get. Yeah. The person says no.
Yeah, that's so, exactly right.
Have a bit of a plan, like try plan it into your year. And, you know, if you know, unfortunately, if you don't know, you don't know. But if you know that it's coming up, try and negotiate some timing that might suit you and your family. Yep. Otherwise, you know, be upfront, let your university know, let your school know. And to be quite honest, I've never had any issues. They understand, especially if you have a letter saying you're having open heart surgery. And then also with the workplace, it's really important to do that. We know I had my surgery at 33. I was in a really high-paced, busy area that I wasn't feeling great anyway. And I ended up stepping down from that role and decided to go back to a slower-paced role that when I took a long period of time off and then a phased return to work, they were actually really comfortable with that. We worked well in the environment that I was on and I was fortunate to have that opportunity. The one thing that I will always say to people is, don't ever think that taking time off to look after your health will impact your career, because it hasn't been the case for me ever. And I have certainly freaked out about that. My career is something that's really important to me. And I've managed to, you know, keep moving along while taking big chunks of time out to make sure that, you know, I can have the surgeries or I can have the rest and recuperation time that I really need so that I can then go into being my best for however long period I've got before I need the next surgery or the next whatever comes up with my health. And I've been very fortunate that, you know, all the workplaces haven't seen that as a detriment. It's just part and parcel of being an adult with congenital heart disease.
Yeah, sometimes we need to take a step back so we could take a step forward, right? And yep. You're going to have a lot of downtime when you're post-surgery. So that could be a time to, you know, upskill yourself a little bit as well, and that could give you something to fill in a bit of boredom, which definitely gets us all. When I had my surgery, as I said, I rolled into my cardiologist appointment with a broken ankle, and I broke it in three places. And, you know, I just recently moved to the Sunshine Coast. So then my ankle surgeries, I should say, took up most of my sick pay and holiday pay and everything like that. And then this heart surgery was sprung on me. I basically had to take the 3 months off pretty well unpaid. But, you know, that's just the breaks that you get. And it was an experience, but, you know, we got through and it was, you know, got done healing, and that's all I was concerned about. So I wasn't concerned about work or anything like that. And it was a beautiful experience at the end of the day.
Well, that's really good.
So what else can we do before surgery to prepare ourselves for when we're able to come home from surgery?
Well, there's actually loads of things that you can do, which I never really realized as a kid. But then as I got older and then decided to write this blog, there's loads of things you can do. You know, have a think through, you know, all these household chores that you're really not going to be able to do because you can't use a vacuum cleaner. You can't, you know, wipe down things vigorously to start with. You know, you've really got to, you know, pace yourself, and having people that you can delegate some of those household chores whether it's, you know, family and friends. And to be honest, if you're having open heart surgery, you probably don't have a shortage of amazing people around you that are willing to help, even if it's just with the cleaning. So lean into them. You know, a lot of people are really independent. I understand that. But just for a couple of months of your life, just lean into it. And, you know, at some stage, you'll be able to do some of those household chores is a bit of exercise and part of your recuperation and physio anyway. But at the start, you know, don't clear it off your plate early. Organize someone to come and help you with it. Have a think about if you need a wheelchair to sort of get around the first little bit. You don't need to, but, you know, sometimes it's a good option if you sort of think, oh, I might want to go and have a look at, for me, in Floriade in Canberra. You know, I can be wheeled around there and still get out and have a look, but not be able to cover as much ground if I was trying to walk it to start with, but then have something that I can still get out in. Have a think about some extra pillows and, you know, a chair that will sort of fold out so you can get your legs up and sort of lay down a bit for all the awesome TV watching that you're going to be doing while you're recovering. That's really important as well. You can also practice some of the things that you're going to need to do post-surgery. So post-surgery, you'll have a broken sternum and you can't really push your hands down to get up from the dining table or anything like that. You've really got to use your legs and your butt muscles. So crossing your arms over your chest and then trying to get up by yourself is a really good practice to do, because you're going to need to do it actually quite a lot. And practicing that beforehand I found really hard because I was already pretty stuffed and essentially doing what's sort of a bit of a half a squat to get up from any time was a bit challenging, but in the end it was really, really worthwhile. And the last thing, along with getting people to help with your household, is also getting your food prepared, because, you know, whipping out and going, oh, I just forgot something, I'll just duck to the shops, isn't really an option for a little while. So, you know, either preparing food, having a think of getting some deliveries, and I think we're all pretty used to that after COVID of getting food delivered to your house. And there's also some really great Deliveroo, Uber Eats, all sorts of things. So have a bit of a plan of when you get home and, you know, everyone's, for me, I had my surgery in Sydney and so then had to get back to Canberra. So once you get home, you're just kind of like, well, I can't cook anything and my poor husband's stuffed and he's just been, you know, stressing out trying to look after me and get all my medications, get me in the car, get me home. And then to also think, oh, God, now I have to cook and do everything. So we kind of prepared as much as we could. So had some frozen dinner, so you just pull out and stick in the oven or something, made a huge difference and relieved our stress once we got home as well.
Stress management, I think, is a huge part of our healing journey, but then also, you know, our support group's healing journey. And it's a massive thing that gets unspoken. But for me, God bless me, Mum, she came around and stuck it out with me for a bit. I ended up kicking her out of home because I'm pretty sure I was sick of her and she was sick of me. But yeah, you know, she's an amazing cook and it's where I've learned a lot of my cooking skills from Mum. So got a bit spoiled there. Yeah. Not pretty good at playing Xbox as well. So that was nice to come back from. But like for my recovery, like I was up on the second story and we had a nice balcony and I got a nice outdoor lounge there. So I didn't have to traverse up and down the stairs or anything like that. And I still got to go out and see some sun. It was a beautiful moment to be able to just sit out there and bask in the Sunshine Coast sunlight.
Yeah, that would have been amazing.
So what do you like to prepare to keep you as comfortable as possible while you're going to be in hospital recovering?
Yeah, I think the fifth time round, I really was prepared. I had all sorts of things. I had prepared some of the hypnosis and other things and some playlists with music and things like that. And when I was in ICU straight out, people are noisy. You know, people come out of surgery, people react all different ways and don't always want to hear it. And also there's the bings and, you know, your machines are going off and they're coming and they're checking everything. And, you know, sometimes you just need to escape a little bit. And so they were very kind and I had downloaded everything to my phone. So I didn't have my phone on any cellular level. It was only on airplane mode. So it wasn't going to interfere with any of the machines in ICU. And then I just had headphones and would crank it right up really loud and just have this like, and I got this really great one and it was a walk in a forest and it was just pure escapism that, you know, I could be lying in the bed, not able to move, feeling really rotten, but I was in a forest feeling the nice tree leaves and it made a huge difference for me. Also, I found some healing ones to start healing post-surgery. I downloaded movies, I had TVs, I had podcasts, magazines, I found it hard to read straight after. So anything that was just audio or visual without having to read was much easier for me. And the other thing was sort of wheat packs and hot water bottles, because I don't know about you, Sam, but my bones and my muscles were just sore. And, you know, they give you great medication these days, but still having a bit of a heat pack or something to kind of dull the aches really helped me as well.
Yeah, music's a huge part of my life, and that's what got me through. And journaling, I love journaling, I love writing. So that was awesome for me to be able to sit there and decompress my brain. I mean, and it was, you know, you're getting a lot of opportunity to do that while you're in there. So it was cool to be able to sit there and write about sort of the experience a little bit. But yeah, the music was a big one for me. So I got a mechanical valve in my chest and it ticks. So it's like a clock. And I was sitting there, it dawned on me when I was like, oh my gosh, I'll get to put some music in my ears and it'll drown it out. And then, yeah, put the headphones on, because the sound's coming from internal rather than external, I could still hear the tick. So I try to picture it as a bit of a metronome to keep up with the music. And that's just my psychological way of getting around the frustration of having that mechanical valve. So, yeah.
Well, I never had thought of that.
Yeah, no, neither did I. I'm just like, oh my gosh, this is going to be great. This will be a perfect solution. But yeah, it didn't work out quite that way. So let's talk about some of the stuff you've written about that might be more relevant to women. And I'll even throw in a couple of things for blokes. But yeah, what are some of your other tips to get prepared, particularly for women?
Yeah, for the ladies, actually, there is some really special things that you really need to think through. First of all, and blokes wear nail polish too and have jewelry, so they need to be able to see your fingernails to see what color they are. So, you know, they'll come and check, are they pink, are they blue, are they, you know, whatever color they are. So getting rid of your nail polish is a really critical part of actually monitoring your well-being while you're in the hospital. And also removal of your jewelry, and I wouldn't recommend taking it to the hospital. I personally have never had anything nicked, and I haven't heard of anyone. Sam, I hope you haven't had anything nicked from the hospital. But no, you haven't. That's good. But I would never take anything that's really valuable. Although it's nice to have those mementos, you have to take them all off and put them somewhere when you go in for the surgery anyway. And when I came out, putting a necklace on that might rub against or touch the scar just completely freaked me out anyway. So I'd leave all of that at home. And I think post-surgery bras are a thing. I didn't know they existed when I had my surgery in 2016. I would have absolutely invested in some, but because you've got a broken sternum and a scar that goes right between your boobs, just it's hard to find something that sits well. And I found underwire bras really hard. So what I did from my previous experience when I was 21 and I knew it would be an issue, I went and bought a size or two larger sports bras with a really thick band. But if you can get a post-surgery bra, that would be even better. But basically just something that's not going to rub on your scar, something that's just going to be really comfortable if you need to wear one, and something you can get on and off. So I couldn't get it on and I couldn't get it off. My poor husband for like weeks was helping me, and I couldn't wear it for very long to start with either. So have a think about what you're going to do with that. And in terms of periods, that's something definitely to watch as a woman. So I had what's called an implanon rod, which was working brilliantly for me. It was really great. And what happened post-surgery was my periods went absolutely haywire, and I ended up anemic with all sorts of issues. So we had to change my contraception for one, and two, then we had to treat the anemia. So, and I kind of had gone to the doctors and said, I don't understand, what does periods and open heart surgery have to do with it? They're like, we don't know, but there's obviously a connection here. But, you know, the massive surgery and the jolt to your system has just rocked everything, and it just had gone completely haywire. So keep an eye on it. And if you see it goes a bit odd, also prepare for immediately post-surgery possible periods. I haven't experienced that, but I do know some women, and oh my God, my heart goes out to you. I can't imagine coming out of open heart surgery and, you know, not being able to move around very easily and then getting your period. So honestly, my heart goes out to you. Just be prepared. Another option for that might be period undies. So you're not, you know, you can obviously still go to the bathroom when you need to, but it's a good option these days, and there's some really decent ones out there. And this one, Sam, you might be able to chime in on, is pubic hair. So when I was a kid, I don't remember everything they did to me when I woke up. Like, I just don't. But when I was 21, I went in for the surgery and I came out, and then at some stage I was like, oh, I need to do a Whittle. And then they're like, no, it's fine. And I was like, no, I really need to go. And they're like, no, it's fine. You've got a tube. And I'm like, I'm sorry, what? I didn't know that they were going to go down there at all. And then my second thought was, oh, God, I would have cleaned up if I had known. Just like, we presented a little bit nicely. And yeah, I just had no idea. So then for the next time, I was like, right, I'm prepared for this. I'm going to do some maintenance. It's going to look good because I know you're going to be messing about down there. It's not just, you know, the upper half of your body. They are going to get down there so that when you get out of your surgery, you can't really get up and go to the loo. So you can stay in the bed and do that. But I understand it's a slightly different experience for the blokes there, Sam.
Yeah, it was a shock to me as well because I didn't realise that it was going to be happening. And I'm pretty sure, like, and I tell people, like, the most traumatic part of my surgery was getting the catheter removed. So it was very confronting, I guess. But yeah, similar sort of thing. Like, you know, I didn't realise that it was actually going to be a thing. And then I had a nurse come in and she was just like, all right, someone's going to come in and shave you down. And I was just like, what do you mean? And so, like, you know, we might need to go through one of the veins in your leg and all that kind of stuff. So I had the frilly paper undies on and you're feeling very vulnerable as it is. And then you have this bloke actually come in to shave me down. And it was a very confronting experience. But yeah, you know, it's something that people should definitely be aware of because, you know, if I had have been, you know, at least been able to somewhat mentally prepare before this bloke came in to shave my bits down, it would have been a bit more a nicer transition, I guess, into it. But at the end of the day, I'm literally about to be wheeled into having open heart surgery. So that's probably the least of my concerns. I just felt sorry for the poor old nurse having to pull it out.
Yep, same. I get it. I totally get it. And like for me, both times as an adult, they never mentioned they were doing it. So, but it was only because they did it the first time that I was prepared for the second time. But yeah, if you've got a bit of notice, just prepare.
Yeah. Definitely.
Are there any other special bloke things to be aware of?
Definitely not post-surgery bras, not for me at least. But like, you know, when you mention it, I'm just like, oh my gosh, it actually makes a lot of sense. So like, you know, it obviously becomes very sensitive because you've literally been cracked open through the center of your chest. But for blokes, the biggest one for me is just the mental health is for blokes to be prepared for it because, you know, because we're trained by society for, you know, for whatever reason that we need to mask all of our issues and problems. And, you know, now we get to say it's okay to not be okay. So just reach out. A big one that took my pride for a bit of a hit as well when I was in the ICU, you get the morphine clicker, which is great. But when you actually manage to fall asleep, you're not pressing the button. So then, you know, you wake up in a world of hurt. And I actually asked the nurse, I'm like, is there anything else that we could do, something that gave me a bit prolonged, and gave me a suppository, which again, you know, as you're sort of laying in hospital and you know, it's a very, very vulnerable position to be in, but I can hand on heart guarantee that it works bloody wonders because I think the painkiller works for about 12 hours or something like that. So your bucket load's more comfortable. And I was a little bit apprehensive asking it for it for the second time, but you know, it's just part of the process and you just got to suck in that pride a little bit. So
absolutely. I understand that one.
So can you tell us or talk us through what it's like waking up after surgery? I know firsthand those few days can be particularly difficult. How did you get through them on your last surgery?
Yeah, I think the thing to know, well, for me, the first few days are always the worst. And I remember waking up thinking, like, just, you know, trying to focus on my breathing, focus on a few things and not get overwhelmed and freak out because I had tube down my throat. At least this time, like, I knew where I was, which was better than when I was 21. I found that really, really hard. When I was 21, I just kept coming in and out of it. And actually, my family kept coming in and out and they were allowed to come in and I got really disorientated because I closed my eyes and then I'd open them and one family member would be there and I thought it was the same period of time, but obviously I'd close my eyes and then no one would be there, then someone else, and I just got really confused and overwhelmed. And finally they took the tube out and I like waved my hand to my mum to like come closer, and I just found it so hard with them there. And she finally leant in and I said, and she said, "What is it, darling? What do you want?" I said, and I told them all to sort off because I found it so overwhelming and I didn't know what to do. And you can't talk really. But then when I was 33 and I went in, I made signs. So I had sign language. And so I did write sort off on one of them. And then I had hold hands sign, and I had different signs. So, and I don't remember using them, but they said that they did use them. And I think the most popular one they said was hold hands, which was nice. And I didn't tell them to sign off this time, which was really good. But yeah, it's an interesting experience. And I also remember thinking, you know, having some perspective and thinking when it was really awful and I was in pain, it wasn't great. And in the last surgery, I just remember thinking, oh God, it could be worse. Come on, you know, trying to give myself a pep talk. I'm like, no, this is as bad as it gets. This is the worst. That kind of reassured me that I was trying to think, oh, it could be worse. I'm like, no, you can't get any worse. Like, this is the worst. And that actually made me feel a bit better because I was like, you know what, I'm kind of coping. This is okay. And thinking about, you know, that sort of thing and trying not to get too overwhelmed and disorientated and thinking through some of the things that I'd practiced and rehearsed about focus on your breathing. You know, I know where I am. I know what's going on, and trying to hold on to those little things that made a huge difference. And also pain management, as you said, with the click button, like you just don't suffer in silence. Honestly, just if you're in pain, say something. Because I remember thinking, oh my God, this is not good. This is really not good. And actually, as a kid, they gave me a bath after one of my surgeries and they laid the bed down and cut off the morphine straight away. And then I don't remember this, but they came up and afterwards and they said, oh, how you feeling? I was like, oh, a bit sore. I'm not feeling that great. And then the nurse apparently said to my mum, oh, well, she's weaned off the morphine. That's good. Let's crack on then. So just don't suffer in silence. And if you are a little bit sore, yeah, say something. Don't sit there and feel awful. So I think also family visits are really important, sort of when you wake up in ICU. It's sort of, I know in the hospital I was in, they're very strict with their times. And for family, one of the best things, or friends coming to visit, please be on time. Please be on time. Because honestly, I was laying there and the one thing that I could see was the clock. The whole time is what I could see was the clock. And I think there's no family from 6 or 8 p.m. until 10 a.m. the next morning. That is a long night. By yourself, trying to listen to, you know, your meditation, trying to self-manage, trying to cope, trying to, you know, not get caught up in the demons of the pain and everything else. It's a really long time, 12 hours, you know, more than 12 hours by yourself in that environment. And the nurses are incredible. But honestly, as soon as 10 a.m. came, I could see like 9:55, 9:57. And as soon as 10 a.m. went and the doorbell went for the whole floor, I knew it was my family and they came straight in and I was like, oh my God, I'm so glad you're here. And it just made a huge difference having them come and be on time because I had literally been counting down the seconds till that I could see them. So what was your experience, Sam?
Yeah, so pain management, definitely. That's a huge one. The nurses and doctors don't want you to basically be in any pain, you know, so please, reiterate that point is do not, you know, especially us blokes, you know, we get our bravado on about it sometimes and, you know, we'd like to think that we can handle it. But yeah, definitely just sing out because it's going to make your recovery better. You know, we mentioned stress before and having pain is your body is putting it into stress. I mean, that's going to hinder your recovery as well. So just make sure that, yeah, you open up and there's no need to have an ego in there. It's okay to say how bloody hell this is hurting. So family visits, my friends and family, that was huge. The part for me that I was most terrified about was the night before when I was in hospital before the surgery. But I was terrified of what that night before was going to be like. So I made sure I had, you know, my best mates there and, you know, my family as well as late as they could. But then, yeah, it actually ended up like I sort of, I guess, was at peace with what was to follow suit the next day. So it was, yeah, not quite as bad. But yeah, you definitely want those distractions and friends coming in to visit. And my sister snuck me in some McDonald's as well. So it was a nice break from the hospital food. She's like, awesome. Yeah, she was driving from Toowoomba to Brisbane and she's like, do you want me to pick you up anything? I'm just like, some McDonald's would be great. So just mixing it up. Yeah, that was a huge part of mine. It's just family and support.
Yeah, I think the night before I freaked out as well. But because I came from Canberra to Sydney and usually you go in a couple of weeks before and they do all the obs and the pre-testing and, you know, your physio test and everything. Because I was coming up from Canberra, I didn't do any of that. And so the day I got there, they like rammed through this battery of tests and everything. So I didn't really have much time to think, kind of being whisked from one thing to the next, to the next, to the next, to try and get all these pre-surgery things done that you'd normally get done if you live near one of those larger surgical centres. And then, yeah, my family were there the whole time. But because I had my list, it was like, I'm really scared about this and this and this. I don't remember a thing. Honestly, I don't know what they gave me, but I don't remember a thing when I was 33. I don't remember going to bed. I don't remember getting up. They're like, you know, you have to have a shower. So I don't remember the shower. I don't remember any of it. And I was like, I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing. I still mentally struggle with that. But, yeah, when I was a kid, I just honestly didn't know any different. So you're just like, oh, yeah, okay, see you. Like, yeah. You just didn't know what you're in for. Then when I was 21, I think it was a long night, but they, you know, very, very lovely, gave me something to help me sleep and everything. And I just, yeah, I think I just, I don't know, for me, I never thought surgery was something that I wouldn't come out of. I don't know why, but I think it's also because by the time I got to 21, I'd already survived 3. So I was like, yeah, just go in, it's like a grease and oil change, and they fix a few things, take you a few months, and then you're better than you were before. This is what you do. So,
Exactly. ICU was an interesting experience. Like, obviously, it's gone through a massive surgery, and then you wake up in ICU, and like I said, you've got a tube down your throat, and the needles hanging out of my neck was, you know, one that was a bit of a shock to me. But my brother, he was one of the first people in the room after the surgery, and it nearly broke him.
Yeah.
He sort of saw me, yeah, everything hanging out, and like, I'm the baby brother. So it sort of broke him. But then when he sort of come back, I was a little bit more to it. I actually, a similar sort of thing to you. I was like, oh, we met. I was like, flipped him off, and I said, I could still beat you up. So it was a beautiful moment for him that he's a lot bigger and burly than I am too. But yeah, it was a beautiful moment for him because it was sort of that point that he knew that I was going to be okay as well. So it was, yeah, it was lovely. But it didn't take me long to, once the chew was out of my throat, to try and get some tucker into my belly. You know, the nurses and doctors were quite amazed with that because I was just, I love my food. So I just needed to get something in me. And it was just a nice sensory sort of thing, as painful as it kind of is being cracked open and going through that, you know, nice to get some sort of real food in your belly again. And yeah, it was beautiful.
Yeah. Some sense of normalcy really helps.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. So coming home after surgery is a huge milestone that we all look forward to, but it doesn't mean our recovery is over. What are your tips and tricks that helped you continue on your recovery when you got home?
I think that, you know, being prepared and the things I talked about before with, you know, having your helpers and having, you know, people to help with your cleaning and having some food prepared. One massive thing for me on the last surgery was rehab. And, you know, to go through 5 open heart surgeries and only on the 5th one have rehab was astounding to me because it made a huge difference to my recovery. So in the hospital, before I went in for my surgery, I did a walking test and a few other physio tests. And then I would have someone come by almost every day, and she was amazing. She, you know, put up with me, I don't want to do it today. And, you know, that kind of thing. She was really motivational. She was fantastic. And then once I left Sydney and got to Canberra, I was like, oh, well, what do we do now? But then I got to do a 6-week course in rehab at Canberra Hospital, which was fantastic. The only thing I struggled with is, one, I was the youngest. 2, mine was congenital. And 3, I found it, some of the crowd, a bit difficult to be around. And I was, I was one of the only ones who'd had a full open heart surgery. Most others had had, for example, a stent or something put in through a catheter. So, you know, out of a room full of people, you know, there was lots of fascination and people were like, oh, hey, what are you here for? Which was great. And I got to make some lovely friends and things like that. But it was confronting sort of being the youngest with the most severe surgery there and trying to sort of work through things. But the nursing staff were incredible. They also had sessions on nutrition and various other things, which was really important for a lot of the people there. And they sort of wouldn't let you go until your sort of heart rate got into a good space. It was really, really reassuring to do exercise and build up my stamina again in a really safe environment. Because I think when I was 21, I remember it was, you know, they send you home with this list and they're like, the first, you know, week you walk to your letterbox and back. Second week you walk to this, and like, it was very rudimentary and it was all self-reliant. Whereas, you know, when you book in for 2 times a rehab a week, you're really accountable for it. And I can't speak highly enough about rehab. And from there, I went on to do clinical Pilates, which I loved. And I have a love-hate relationship with exercise. Sometimes it takes too much energy from me. Sometimes it helps build it up. And I struggle still to this day to get the balance right. But having rehab after the surgery showed me what I was actually capable of, and I found it really fantastic to be able to do. Did you get rehab after yours?
So I had rehab, obviously, at the hospital. It's part of it. You know, they want you standing up 24 hours generally after you have your surgery. And yeah, I was sort of in a similar boat to you, like, you know, the age thing. I was the youngest person on the ward by a considerable margin, but I'm also stubborn as an old ox. So I was very adamant about getting out as soon as possible from the surgery. And for me, you know, the milestones that you need to do is be able to walk upstairs, you know, be able to do these particular things. So I just push through any sort of pain and difficulty, but that's just, yeah, my mind and how it works. And then I lived in a complex. So, you know, I was walking around the complex and doing a bit of stuff. I sort of shared this story with my in the Heart Kids video that was released. I was released 6 days after surgery. And then on the seventh day, I actually got my mum to take me down to the beach. And, you know, being able to walk down to the beach, put my feet in the water, feel the waves on my legs, that was instrumental in my recovery, because it was then that I really knew that I was going to be okay. Like, you know, and it's just, you could feel like all the negative energy sort of being sapped from your body. Even now, it gives me goosebumps when I think about it. So yeah, physio is hugely important, and there's some wonderful physios out there, and we've got a lot of support. So it doesn't even necessarily cost you anything or next to nothing.
Yeah, it didn't cost anything, but that's amazing.
It's something that I didn't realize. So I got blessed by an unbelievable physio up here, and he actually specialized in cardio sort of recovery, which was just by chance. And he was talking to me about, like, when you get cracked open, you know, it's releasing all of the pressure in your chest and all the muscles that are all connected. So you can actually have issues from the base of your skull down to your groin, because everything's just so intertwined that, yeah, you can have all sorts of problems. So, you know, if you're getting pain in your groin, don't think that it's your groin, that, you know, it could have been something from your chest. So something for people to keep in mind.
Absolutely. If you can find a physio, especially one that's got cardiac experience, grab onto them with both hands. They're worth their weight in gold. They're amazing. I think something else that really helped me was visitors, and because I had to go to Sydney and then, you know, coming home, I find coming home quite nerve-wracking, and I honestly don't know how my parents did it as a kid, because I think as a child, you know, you're released after a couple of days after open heart surgery. And then I lived in Wagga Wagga, and there wasn't the nice highway there, you know, it would take them 8 hours plus to get home. And then they're in this regional centre with this kid who's just had major surgery and, you know, charged with, here you go, keep her alive, knock yourselves out. Like, it was so confronting. Like, at least, you know, Canberra's got great hospitals and Wagga does too now, but, you know, getting in the car and, like, we were prepared this time, and I was still, you know, I had tracky pants and stuff on, and I remember, you know, we got lots of pillows, so I had a pillow between the seatbelt and me, because just the pressure of the seatbelt freaked me out, but that seemed to work perfectly, and I had, you know, other pillows around me. I was very comfortable in there. And, you know, you've got to stop on the way home, and, yeah, going into Macca's, and I must have just looked an absolute treat. I couldn't get into the toilets because you have to pull the door open, and I couldn't get into the toilets because the door was too heavy. And this nice lady came up and she opened the door. She just gave me the weirdest look, and I was like, oh, God, how do I explain this to people? I'm like, fine, I'm just going to cop it. Like, fine, whatever. Yeah. I managed to get into the toilet and push my way out the door to, like, get back out. But, you know, little things like that, try and, if you don't live close to where you're having your surgery, try have a think of that. And then, yeah, visitors in moderation, I would say. And, you know, I've been really blessed as well with great friends and family who want to come and say hi and, you know, wish you well in your recovery. And I get really excited when they come, and then I use all of my energy and then completely crash. And whoever, you know, my husband, my mom, and whoever's there at the house who has to, you know, look after me, has to, like, pick up the pieces after my wonderful friends come and visit. So I try now and do it in moderation so that I don't fade out as much afterwards and that there's not as much recovery. So sort of I kept it to maximum of an hour, but really probably could have been half an hour for the first little bit, and then build up sort of time. And, you know, or, I mean, these days it's pretty easy. You can do FaceTime, you can do all sorts of things to still see people and stay connected, which is great. But, yeah, having regular chats about, you know, boring stuff, like what's the new movie that's come out and what are you doing? And some of my friends, you know, they know I'm housebound essentially, or, like, not very mobile for a couple of weeks, and they didn't want to tell me much about, you know, oh, we went here and we went to the beach and we did this and we did that. And, you know, for us to go to the beach out of Canberra takes a couple of hours. So that's a bit different. But I kind of got to the point where I was like, can we just talk about this stuff? Because, you know, I love hearing about what you're doing out in the world. And it's only going to be a couple of months. It's not or a couple of weeks or to start with before I can start doing, go to the movies and a few other things as well. So, you know, please tell me what you're doing. Don't hold back. You know, let me know what's going on. And having a bit of a laugh. And obviously, you know, I love having people around. And so making sure I did a bit of prep before the surgery so I could cater for my guests when they came, which sounds really stupid, but it's an important thing because I want them to be happy and comfortable when they come visit me, because they're coming to visit. I understand it's, you know, time out of their busy day and, you know, everyone's got stuff on. And yeah, I found, yeah, prepping a little bit of snacks and things for them to come to.
I love snacking, so I can use them as an excuse and I just get to eat it all anyway. So it works.
Exactly. But yeah, do try when you get home, rest and recuperate and, you know, make sure you've got all your medicine. Try booking and see your regular GP and keep in touch with them if you need any additional medication afterwards. And I think last time we got home, we realized that we hadn't been discharged with one of the key pain medications, which was terrible. So we finally got home and I'm like, oh, this is really, I don't feel great. And then, yeah, we realized that we were missing it, and to get in and get it sorted was a bit of a debacle, but we managed to get there. But make sure you've got all your medication when you leave your hospital.
Yeah, especially pain medication. Yes. It is going to be required. Yes. So you did a lot of work on your mental health and built coping strategies before your surgery. How did your mental health journey progress through your recovery? And do you have any tips for other people about managing the mental side of things during recovery?
I think the biggest thing right from when you wake up from the surgery and onwards is celebrate the wins. You know, you're going to get the tube taken out. Celebrate it. That's a win. I hate to say it, but your first poo is a big deal. Celebrate that. You know, your first standing up after 24 hours, that's a big deal. Celebrate that. You know, don't lose sight of those little things because they really add up to actually quite a lot. You know, being able to go to the physio appointments at the hospital was a big deal as well. Being able to drive at some point is really important as well, and make sure you talk to your specialist and everyone about when it's safe for you to be able to drive. But when that day comes, that's another, you know, thing to celebrate and try and keep those things in perspective. And for me, I felt unwell each time before I went in for the surgery. And one of the biggest mental things for me is to know that, you know, this fixed it, you know. And I've had complications afterwards, and that was really rough. I had, when I was 21, I had blood clots in my heart and a few other things, and that was not fun to try and sort out, and kind of delayed my recovery for about a year. But at the same time, I still felt a little bit better than I had prior to the surgery. So knowing that, you know, they're not going to crack you open and do this major surgery for nothing. It's to make you feel better and to, you know, extend your quality of life. And I spent some time really thinking about, okay, so once I get to 6 months, what am I going to do that I couldn't do before? And trying to keep that in perspective. So we went to New York and Hawaii, and in Hawaii, we like climbed some beautiful hills and it was amazing. And, you know, New York is massive to get around, and I could get around and still pretty stuffed at the end of the day because it's so huge. But, you know, got to walk around some of the most incredible museums in the world and see different things, and trying to keep all of that in perspective and think about what I get from, to be honest, out of, you know, a whole life of, you know, life expectancy is 80 to 100, let's just say, being optimistic, you know, having a couple of months of downtime to do some fine tuning and a grease and oil change is what I call it, so that you can go and really live your life is doing that. I think the one thing in retrospect is to keep in mind that, yeah, you get a new lease on life, but you still need to do the boring things. So, you know, I would always focus on, but I get to go, you know, Hawaii, or we get to do this. I'm like, all right, and now I can do the cleaning. And I can do the boring thing. Well, I think they're very boring in life. And, you know, being able to do those things and take pride in, you know, your house and, you know, yourself again was really special. And to also say thanks very much to my amazing support network, because I couldn't have done it without them. And I know that they sacrificed a lot for me to be where I am today. And, you know, mentally keeping that in mind and being able to, when I'm, you know, well enough to go back and say, thanks so much. You know, I can do this now because of you. And, you know, you've really made a huge difference in my life. So, yeah, still thank you to all my friends and family. They're amazing.
Yeah, I don't think they get enough credit. You know, it's huge, you know, that they take on just as much as we do. Obviously not physically, but mentally, you know, it's a lot. I have a very distinct image that's in sort of caught up in my brain of when I was getting wheeled into hospital in the bed and just about to go through the last doors, you know, that my parent, like mum could be. And, you know, I just remember her looking down at me and, you know, could just see a fear, I guess, in her eyes. You know, I'm the baby. I'm the favorite, obviously. So, you know, it's, you know, your baby's going in to have open heart surgery. So it's a lot for us to make sure that they're okay as well. So, yeah, it's huge. And don't think if you're going through it, don't think that you're alone either. There is a huge support. That's a massive thing that we're trying to, I guess, promote through this podcast. And it's a beautiful message that's just naturally coming through as well, is to say, you have support. There are people out there that have gone through what you've gone through. Reach out, you know, go to Heart Kids, find the resources that are available to make sure that you're doing okay, because your mental battle is one of the biggest battles that you're going to go through. The physical stuff, your body does most of the work for you. You've just got to grit your teeth and get through it. But the mental stuff is the stuff that really hits you. And yeah, it's hard.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think one of the things I learned over the last couple of years is the Heart Kids community and how amazing it is. And, you know, I'd sort of, especially when I was 21, really felt like I kind of went it alone. And I had amazing family and friends, but getting to meet people like you, Sam, and others who have experienced that and talking to people and trying to, you know, it sounds terrible. It's great to get a pep talk from friends and family to try and get you through it. But pep talk from someone who has been through it, survived it, and is thriving, or even if they're still struggling a little bit, you know, but they've got some tips about, oh, I did this and this helped me, or, you know, just some options, and just knowing that they're out there and you can reach out anytime is a huge mental uplift, definitely. And Heart Kids has been a huge part of my life now, and I think it's really special what they can do. And talking about parents and sort of seeing the poor look in their faces is just, I never understood fully, and I never will, until I started meeting some Heart Kid parents and, you know, seeing what they go through. And, you know, they're my age, I'm 39, and seeing what they go through and, you know, the Herculean things that they do for their kids is just incredible. You know, I put strains on, you know, my dad had a small business and my mum, you know, worked part-time, and the strain on them is incredible, and what they give up and sacrifice and do for us is absolutely amazing. So massive shout out to all the Heart Kids families, and definitely the siblings as well. I mean, they miss school to come see you at hospital when you're kids as well, and, you know, take time off work to come and help you and do all sorts of amazing things. So yeah, the families are incredible, but the Heart Kids family is also really very, very special.
Yeah, I love it. Like, you know, I've done a few different things for Heart Kids over the years, like, you know, education days and different, I guess, things where I get to talk and meet different family members. And it's beautiful being able to go out to the hospital wards and see the kids and, you know, get to relate, because I'm like, look, I've got a zip, you know, and then see this big bearded bloke that he's walking around with, you know. But it's cool to have the interactions with parents, because, like, you know, especially the ones whose children are about to go through heart surgery, like, you know, it's this huge weight on them to say, oh my gosh, they're about to go through it. And then when you see someone like me who's coming in with, you know, character as big as life, you know, and it's still really positive, even through all the negative that you went through, still positive. And it's beautiful. You can see them light up and, you know, just become a little bit lighter in their body and how they hold themselves, because, yeah, it's going to be okay. So, it's, yeah, beautiful. What was your return to work like?
It was bumpy. It was a bit bumpy, to be quite honest. When I was 21, I had the complications that I mentioned with the clots, which made it really difficult. So I just had to sort of muddle through as best I could. And the next, when I was 33, I kind of knew a bit better. And so I don't know about you, but I tend to overdo it. I'm like, yeah, I've got this energy, I can use it all. And learning that just because I have energy doesn't mean I can use it all is really hard. So the last time I started part-time 3 days a week, so half days. So I did like Monday, Wednesday and Friday. And on the intermittent days, I was supposed to be resting, but I was like, no, no, it's fine. So I'd organize all these coffee dates, which didn't help with the recovery. So, and I had had 2 months off work, and it took me a month of phased return to work where I was part-time and slowly built up my hours. And I was in a really good really lovely place where the people were really supportive and really great that I ran out of leave. And it took me a month or two to try and get it sorted because the workplace I had did have a special provision. If you have extenuating circumstances, you can apply for extra leave. And I was like, well, I'm pretty sure this counts. And so I put in, but it took a while to process through the bureaucracy of the area I was in. And I eventually got it and it all worked out fine. And then over time, I was really fortunate that I got to return to the really busy job that I absolutely loved and got to, you know, travel the world and do some really incredible things. And I was really fortunate that they took me back. And when I started back, you know, they were like, okay, so the first month here, which was like 3 or 4 months post-surgery, they're like, you can work 9 to 5. And it was not a 9 to 5 job. And they were really lovely. So by 5 o'clock, they'd all be coming around going, it's 5. Go on, get out. Go, go, go. And they were amazing. And I, you know, built up the rest of my stamina and was able to make a contribution. And I think, you know, all heart kids, really, we just want to make a contribution. You want to, you know, feel like you're making, you know, a contribution to society through whatever you're doing. But I was just really pleased that although it was bumpy, it hasn't hindered my career, hasn't stopped me from doing some really incredible things and keeping it in perspective of, okay, well, it's bumpy, it's going to be bumpy. And then when we can, you know, get back into doing the really high flying kind of things. But you really need to take the time to recover properly. And I guess the other thing is now going forward, because I know that there's no cure for CHD. And, you know, the surgery for me is as I say, a grease and oil change. And at some stage, the valve or whatever's in there is going to sort of crust over or something's going to happen and I'm going to need it replaced, which hopefully they can do through a catheter next time. But I'll probably need some time off again at some stage. So now I'm really careful about who my employer is, and I actively look at what's your leave policy? What's your, do you have additional provisions for extenuating circumstances? Do you have this and that? And I really go to some effort in picking workplaces now that I know that can support that sort of thing. And I'm also upfront. I'm really upfront. I'm saying, you know, I have this, and at the moment I'm going really great. So, you know, let's crack on and make some really great things happen while we can.
That's right. And I think we can get caught up in, you know, just keeping up with the Joneses in the rat race and, you know, we're supposed to be here, there or whatever it is, but you're going through something that nobody else really probably gone through within that workplace. But what that gives you is perspective, and then you can use that within your career and you really use that to find your purpose. And yeah, that's a powerful tool from my standpoint anyway. That's what I had like, and yeah, that's great. So finally, after weeks of preparation and planning, the hospital stint, months-long recovery, we do finally get through it and things start returning to normal. Reflecting on your last surgery experience, what feelings come up for you when you look back at it?
I think gratitude, really. You know, as I said, I'm just so grateful for, you know, really awesome surgeon, a really great medical team, the advances in medicine. I'm so grateful for that. That we have physio now and it's free is incredible in itself. And as we go forward, I might not need to have another open heart surgery. We might just be able to do it through a catheter or something else. I'm, yeah, really grateful for friends and family and, you know, positive workplaces. And also, I guess I'm really grateful for what I've learnt over the time about mental health, as we've discussed a lot, and how to try and manage that and the importance of trying to keep on top of it, because I don't, you know, I still stumble and don't keep on top of it and things like that. But putting the time and effort into acknowledging that mental health is a really big part of it and working through a lot of those things was really important and critical for me. And I'm really grateful that I found some amazing counselors as I've gone on post-surgery. Even, you know, years later, I still had some flashbacks and issues that, you know, I have nightmares and all sorts of not so pleasant stuff, which if you don't know any better, then you kind of just think it's normal, which sounds very odd when you say it out loud that you think having, you know, flashback nightmares are normal. But if you don't know any different, you just think that's what happens to everyone. And finding someone great to really work through a lot of that and try and address it so I can really move forward and not have any of that really. And also just there were no hiccups, to be honest, because I've had complications post-surgery. And I honestly think my mindset for the last surgery and all the preparation and sort of knowing what I was getting myself into made a huge difference for my last surgery. Whereas when I was 21, I just had no clue what was going on. And, you know, everything's a surprise and confronting. And, you know, you wake up and you've got a catheter and your tube down your throat, you can't talk. Like, if I had it, I just didn't remember any of it from when I was a kid. And knowing a bit more going forward and preparing mentally, just really grateful that I did those things and invested in it. And also trying to support friends and family to seek the mental health support that they also need is really important.
Yeah, I think gratitude's a beautiful lesson across the board in life. I think it's something that we can all take in, even if you don't have open heart surgery. We are blessed within this life. So even through all the hurdles and stumbles that we might have to deal with. So I think that about wraps it up. I think I've chewed you off enough now. So thank you very much for coming on to the podcast. Thank you for the work that you've done with Heart Kids as well, and for being such an inspiring person like you and sharing your story with others. It's meaningful to me, and I know it's going to be meaningful to Heart Kids and their family members as well. So thank you very much.
Thanks, Sam. Really appreciate the opportunity to come and talk to everyone. And yeah, it's great that you share your story as well. It's equally as inspiring. And thanks also to the amazing Heart Kids community and the Heart Kids as an organisation. They do incredible things for so many of us, even just having the opportunity to have this conversation. So massive thank you and shout out to Heart Kids as well.
Very grateful, very grateful. So you can find Elle's full article, Open Heart Surgery Tips and Tricks from a Pro, on the Heart Kids blog. We'll post a link in the show notes. The full version includes a checklist for things you should pack before going to hospital and questions you might want to ask your healthcare team before you leave hospital. It's an incredibly helpful resource for anyone having open heart surgery. If this episode has brought up anything for you, or you need some advice or guidance on your CHD journey, you can call the Heart Kids helpline on 1-800-432-785. To access more information, as well as find out more about the support Heart Kids offers, visit the website at heartkids.org.au. The information in this podcast is not a substitute for medical advice from your doctor or healthcare team. Always talk to your doctor about matters that affect yours or your family's health.